Good morning. We are continuing today on Perek Tes Zayin of the Tiferes Yisrael. The role of this Perek, as you recall, is the Maral's unique way of addressing the question of Torah min Hashamayim, the divinity of Torah. Usually, when we try to prove the divinity of Torah, we do it in specific technical ways. We try to say, well, you know, 600,000 men standing around the mountain, right? People claiming that 600,000 men, this is not like, you know, five, you know, guys that sound like a rock band, Peter, Paul, and Mary, you know, Sas claim to have seen somebody water skiing. You know, it's 600,000 people saying that they heard HaKadosh Baruch Hu coming down. You know, the Kuzri kind of proof, right? It's 600,000 people saying it and passing it on to their children that they witnessed it themselves. Okay, it's proof. There must be truth that HaKadosh Baruch Hu came and gave Torah from the Shemayim. Then you would say, well, I'll bring you a proof, like we said, from the fact of how the Torah speaks about the non-kosher animals, and it lists the ones that have split hooves but don't chew their cud, and so on and so forth. And, you know, in all time, we haven't discovered other animals that have these properties. You know, whatever it is, those kinds of proofs. Looking at the document and proving things in the document. Maral's approach to demonstrating Torah min Hashamayim is more aligned with the way his general approach is, which is more conceptual than evidentiary. His conceptual proofs, as we saw, took on three levels. The first level proof was that anyone looks at the world, they see that the world is created and it didn't just happen, right? The world has an order to it. The world has a broadness and a ribui and a seder that's ongoing, that one understands that the world was created with some kind of a plan and a direction. But he says, on the other hand, that plan and direction could be very easily, immediately destroyed. I don't know, I was thinking about this last week as I haven't heard the news since Shabbos. Right? But last week it seemed like every day, you know, at least for the first half of the week, you're reading about 100 people being blown up, you know, someplace, you know, women and children, you know, like to boot. Like, you know, that's a world of seder. You know, like these people wake up in the morning and they look and they say, wow, look how that flower has blossomed. This is such a world of order. That's a world of chaos. That's a world of utter chaos. Says the Maral, so you think HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a world with such specificity and such order to it, and he didn't give the instructions about what would it take to maintain the order within the world? A world with Ritzicha and Geneva and Niyuf, a world with murder and stealing and adultery, is an unordered world. It's a world, like as we said last time, it's like, you know, they send you the car, but they don't give you the manual as to how the car is supposed to be able to be maintained, that you can keep it, right? If you want the project to last, you need to be able to be made known how the project will last. So for the sake of Seder Ha'olam, there has to be a revelation of the Torah. The second level is because a human being is created with a unique capacity of wisdom. And that is something which the person is sort of like given potentially to be able to have, to be able to discover. But we want it all to some degree, says the Maral, to be part of creation. Something which man is given. Man is given the wisdom. Now, yes, it's true. Even when the Torah is given, it remains in the hands of each person to claim it, to learn it, to absorb it. And it will still end up with the variation of some people who will have perfected their wisdom to a greater degree, and some to a lesser degree, and some perhaps to no degree, hardly at all. But the idea that is part of the creation of man, just like HaKadosh Baruch Hu created people, b'tziv yonam, he created them, you know, fully with full development and so on and so forth, so he also to some degree created them with full capacity, with the full development in that sense of seichel, of wisdom, also as a possibility. And we talked about a little bit, you know, the struggles with this. we compared it to something which he taught us in the Be'er HaGoyla about creating people with capacity that then they would be able to figure certain things out by themselves. And he wants, however, Maral here very much is focused on the idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to give. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to make it. And yes, we're very much focused, as you know, some of you were here yesterday, we talked about the idea of how, you know, we don't just have HaKadosh Baruch Hu create the whole person and then the person, you know, just say, okay, Rebbeinu Shel Olam, whatever you make is what it is. A person has to finish the job. But at the same time, there's a certain level of Hashem putting it there, laying it there, having it there, that would, without it, the Maral sees it as being, you know, just a lack of the Shlemus of the Bria, a lack of the Shlemus. So Hashem put out the Torah, and he put it out in the Midbar, he put it out in the desert, he made it something that's visibly accessible in that sense to everybody. Visibly accessible to everybody. And the third piece that he said was, the third piece that would demonstrate the necessity and the role of Torah Min HaShemayim is because without Torah Min HaShemayim, without this guidance from the Shemayim, one might say that man would be the most disconnected creature from Hashem of all the creatures in the world. I don't think we expressed it exactly this way last time, expressing it a little bit differently. Man necessarily, of course, has to have a connection to the Rabbi Mishloim. Man of all creatures has to have the greatest connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? Because of the of his position within the world. But because man is on top of the world, because man is created, and in fact is created with bechira, with independence, with free choice. So he's not like a malach. A malach easily has connection to Hashem because he's exactly what Hashem made him to be. An animal could be seen as having a great connection to Hashem because he is exactly what Hashem made him to be. A human being is given the independence of bechira, the free choice, and therefore maybe the human being is going to be therefore what he makes himself. And of course, to a certain degree, that's true. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to draw the line. The Torah is the line, the cable that connects the human being to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that the human being is really not just Birshus Atzmo, in his own, under his own dominion, on his own, doing his own thing, separate from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The connection has to be there. So it's not just because man has to be created with the potential for perfection, and this is the potential for perfection, so he has to be given it. But there has to be an umbilical cord that is mechaber, that connects the man to the to the rest. Yeah.
With the analogy that you drew about the owner's manual from the car manufacturer.
Yeah.
They also usually delineate in the opening, the introduction, their responsibilities versus yours. If you don't maintain it, we don't take responsibility for your engine.
Right.
So, in the Torah also the same way where, these are the parts that you get to choose, and these are the parts you don't get to choose.
Right. Ultimately, again, Torah is something which is going to be given over to our Bechira. Right? But it's like saying, okay, you know, you got to take care of it. And if you do, and so on and so forth, but we're also not cutting you loose. You know, we have dealerships. We're not just, there's still the point of chibur. But yes, of course, in everything which he's talking about here, the counterpoint is bechira. The counterpoint is the fact that not everybody takes advantage of these. Right? This is not like something, a chibur which is automatic, which is natural. You know, in the sense that it's going to be connecting the person to Hashem, whether he likes it or not. Okay, but this is the line of connection, and he says in here a beautiful little machshava. I've just been talking to a couple of people around this table about members of their family becoming bar mitzvah, and he has here a very simple and beautiful and chashava machshava thought that goes into that. This is in the Hardman edition. If you're looking in the Hardman edition, on page Resh Memvav, he says like this. says, you know, that you could say, what do you mean? What do you mean? A lack of connection between a person and Hashem? Of course there's a connection between a person and Hashem. Mm-hmm. And who remembers what the Maharal spoke about earlier about the idea of Yirat Shamayim? Remember when he learned, he says, there are six parts of Torah, the Gemara brings, Emunah, Sitecha, Chaisin, Yeshua, Yischachma, Vadas, the six orders of the Mishnah. And the Gemara says, but in the end, you have to have Yirat Hashem. If you have fear of heaven, then that will hold it together. What's the critical nature of Yirat Hashem? Because, you know, you could love somebody from today till tomorrow. You could love somebody from today till tomorrow, but you know, you could love them, and you could leave them. Right? You can make a partnership with somebody, and fantastic, we're together, you add so much, and so on and so forth, but you know what? I'll do without it. Dependence is something else. Right? You can make a partnership with somebody and go into a real estate venture, and then you could decide to break it up. If you go to the bank to borrow money for the real estate venture, you can't call them up one day and say, you know what, we decided we want to terminate our relationship. You know, you gotta pay up. You're gonna have to surrender the property. The relationship in that sense with the bank is going to be more real, more intense than it's gonna be with the partner. The partner is somebody who you know, you're choosing and all the nice, you know, positive stuff. But one is, you know, ultimate dependence. Says Maral, you have a problem of finding relationship between man and Hashem? Of course man has a relationship with Hashem. He's completely dependent on Hashem. Hashem gives us our breath. Hashem gives, and Hashem, l'elein rachmono litzlan, at certain points Hashem takes, right? Which shouldn't happen until lachar meiv Hashem, but Hashem takes. Everybody's vulnerable to Hashem, so everybody's connected to Hashem. What, a human being is disconnected? Says the Maharal, says, of course a human being is connected that way. But so is a giraffe. So is a tree. In order to talk about a connection between a human being and Hashem, you can't suffice to have a connection which is generic, which could have been the same kind of connection that everything else in creation has. You have to have a connection on the line of that which is uniquely human. And that which is uniquely human is the seichel, the wisdom, the soul, and its relationship to that seichel. On that level you have to have that live connection. So that is where the Torah instruction, where the Torah connection comes in. And so says the Maharal, says, when does a person become a bar mitzvah? When they become a bar das. When we consider their das, their wisdom, as being ripe, that's when they are mature, you know, it's now they have developed wisdom, now they become a person of mitzvah. Because that's when they've become fulfilled in the specifically human dimension. The human dimension of seichel has now been developed to a point where it can be said to be present in that 13-year-old child. Hopefully, that's not full capacity, right? But nevertheless, it's developed to the point of significance that the child can be called a bar das, a person of seichel. So therefore, now the connection of mitzvah begins. You understand, this is again, it's not just, okay, now you're a bar das, I can ask you to do it and expect that you're going to follow through. Right? That's normally the way you see it. A bar das, I can give you an achrayis, I can give you a responsibility. He's saying, no, there's a new level of connection which a person has as uniquely as a human being, and that capacity of being a human being with das is, you know, comes at a certain point of maturity. Okay. Did we talk about Kaf Aleihem Har Kegigis last time? I don't remember how about that. No, we didn't. Okay.
Are you still going around the theme of proving divinity toward divinity, or is that what just...
This is all part of it. In other words, what he's saying is, this necessitates that Hashem would have had to have given a world of instruction.
Okay.
This necessitates Hashem having to... Well, it doesn't prove the specific volume that we have. It doesn't prove any specific verse or anything else. There had to have been a Torah min Hashemayim. Hashem had to connect to us on the level of wisdom. That's basically that's this last proof. Hashem had to have connected us on the level of wisdom. So here again, you know, he follows through and says, well, okay, so then maybe it could be something that the person discovers for himself. like to some degree the Avos, which again is something he's going to be exploring in the coming Prakim, the Avos relationship to Torah. Why can't it be that? So he says, well, look, HaKadosh Baruch Hu can create a connection. This goes back to the Yirah Shamayim, which we spoke about before. HaKadosh Baruch Hu can create a connection which is voluntary. That's the part of Har Sinai which we know as Nasa V'Nishma. Now there are elements to a voluntary connection that are incomparable in anything else. That's why Hashem proposed. He says, would you like the Torah? And the Jewish people said yes. Hashem would do it later. You know, it was a fascinating thing that we reference in Haggadah. When Yeshua was dying, he went to the Jewish people. He says, guys, what do you say? You want to keep the Torah? Or what about would you like to maybe keep the gods of the Canaanim? Would you like to worship, you know, their style or our style? What would you want to do? Jewish people say, how can we not? I mean, Hashem took us out of Egypt. He says, no. He says, he's a tough God. You know, you really want to get into it? And they said, yeah, we really want it. We really want it. So, right, it's a strange story. What do you mean? They had a choice. They had a choice. Somebody come to you and ask you this question? Yeah, they had a choice. Their father stood at Har Sinai. Their grandfather stood at Har Sinai. The people at the end of the life of Yeshua. Like, what choice do they have? So the Ralbach says, of course they didn't have a choice. But what Yeshua wanted was, he wanted the Jewish people to choose, even though they didn't have a choice. Because when you choose, it's a whole different story. When you choose, it's a whole different story. When you're forced into something, there's a strength to that. You don't have a choice. You must do it. But there's a weakness to that, because you're forced to do it. He wanted to add that element. So the Maral essentially says that Kol Yisrael said Nasa V'Nishma, and famously, Chazal tell us that at the same time, Hashem held a mountain over their head. Like, what's going on? Was it voluntary or was it forced? It's a famous question. The Medrash asked the question. Taisus asked the question. Right? So the Maral, instead of dividing up like others do between Torah Shebech Sav and Torah Shebal Peh, whatever, he says, no, the idea is that sure, there's a Kabbalah, and we'll discuss this more later when we have the real prakim about that Gemara in Shabbos that the Maral's going to, about Matan Torah. But he says, yeah, you, there's such a thing as a value to a voluntary Kabbalah. That was their Nasa V'Nishma. But a connection which is just simply up to you, and again, that's like the partner instead of the bank. A connection which is just simply up to you is not nearly as firm. Not nearly as firm. Where you realize, I must do this. I have no choice but to do this. I have to do this. Where I'm instructed by Hashem, instead of voluntarily just searching it out and finding it, there's a different quality to that connection. Each side has its advantages. Each aspect, the aspect of voluntary acceptance and the aspect of it being given from Hashem to us, put upon us, that also has its advantage. It also has its advantage. Things which we're excited and interested in doing, we do them when we're excited and interested. We inevitably don't remain excited and interested all the time, right? We get into it and we fall out of it. Sometimes we're into it and sometimes we're out of it. It's good to have in the background that you got to do it, right? Everybody tries to choose to go into a field of work that they're really interested in, that they really like, right? Like when you were choosing your career, you probably tried to choose that. Does that mean that this Wednesday morning, if the weather is like this, you're going to be just roaring out of bed because you like the field of work that you went into? Right? You know that you need to be there. You know that you have clients. You know that you have a family to feed. You know that whatever else it is, that helps to get you keep doing it. Right? The enthusiasm is not always there. Is it? Is it only me? No, I'm just kidding. okay. So that's the way it works. Now, what I would like to do with you today, for the balance of the time, is do the completion of the Perek of the Maharal. But I want to do it with you in a way that we don't usually do it here in this. But it's such a beautiful, magnificent piece and analysis of a nice, neat Gemara that I would like to give you each a copy of the Gemara. And please, I never do this right. Okay, here we go. Take a piece. It's a Gemara on the top of Lamed Ches on the Beis in Sanhedrin. And it's a Gemara that describes the first day of creation. And it describes the stages of Briyas HaAdam in the first stage of creation. It's at the top of the page, third line, Amar Rav Yechon, Amar Rav Chanina. Okay, now he's going to be using this Gemara to support this last point. Maybe the two last points, right, that he made, which is that the mitzvah satayra is to complete the person and to create the line between the person and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What he's going to do is, he's going to take this Gemara, where Rav Yechon Rav Chanina describes the development of man. Rav Yechon Rav Chanina says there are 12 hours in the day. The sixth day of creation also had 12 hours, okay? Anybody wants to go with a literal, non-literal route, that's up to them, right? But 12 hours to the day. And he describes man being created over those 12 hours, which is something, you know, to itself to consider, because Hashem created something else on the sixth day. What else did he create? Animals. Created all the animals on the sixth day. When did he do that? Right, so either he was doing it parallel to creation of Adam, right, or maybe he created them in the evening before, Vayera Vayivayker, right? Maybe he created the animals in the evening before. The way the Maral says, he says he spreads man's creation over the 12 hours of the day, because the day light is the main part of the day. That's why we call a day 24 hours, but we call Vayikra Lekim La'oryem, Hashem called the light part of the day the day. That's the main part. And man is the main part of the Bria. So therefore, the way man is fully the mainstay of the Bria, he should take the full main day, main part of the day in his creation. That's what Maral says, brief shorthand. But now let's look at how Rav Yechon Rav Chanina describes it. 12 hours in a day. In the first hour, Hashem piled together, collected the earth, the dust, from which man would be formed. Hashem was formed man as dust from the earth. So it took him, during the first hour, he brought together the dust of man. Shnia nasa goylam. In the second hour, he made it into a goylam. What's a goylam? Okay, you know.
Right.
Yeah, we're learning Maral. Right? I always wanted to maybe try doing that in one of these shurim, but we have these gemaras in the middle of the table. But a goylam is literally means a block, right? Like a block, right? The goylam, excuse the expression, was a blockhead. You know, it was just like just a form. You know, that's what it was. When you speak about a piece of metal that's shaped, you know, long and narrow, but still hasn't been sharpened at the tip and made a hole at the top at the eye, that's called golme clay matches. It's a golem of a metal, of a. It's not yet a formed needle. It's just still just a piece of metal. That's a golem, right? So he made it into a piece. Why? Off or dust? You know, imagine if a human being was really just dust, right? It'd be shedding all over the carpet, right? So he had to make it into a mass. Bring the dust together. Next, third hour, shlishis nimtachu evarav. In the third hour, his limbs grew out of him, were spread out of him. Revius, in the fourth hour, Nizruka by Neshama, a soul was put into him, thrown into him, so to speak. Chamishis, in the fifth hour, Amar al Raglav, he stood up on his feet. Shishis, Korah Shemais, in the sixth hour, he named all the other creatures. Remember, in the second parak of Bereshis, it says, Hashem brought all the animals before man to see what he would name them. Shavius, Nizdav Galoi Chava. In the seventh hour, he was mated to Chava, meaning that the shidduch was made. They were Chava was broken off, created, whatever it was. Now he had a partner. Shminis Olu Lamita Shnayim Yodwar Bo. In the eighth hour, the two of them entered a bed, and four left. Right. This is the picture which Chazal have of the world before the Chet, and before Hashem told Chava, it's going to be, I'm cursing you, that childbirth is going to be a long and arduous and painful process. Otherwise, it was going to be instant coffee. So that's what happened in the eighth hour. Right? Talk about a full day. She is nitzdava shalei lechol min ha'ilan. In the ninth hour, he was instructed not to eat from the tree. Asiris sarach. In the 10th hour he sinned and ate from the tree. Achas esrei nidon. In the 11th hour he faced the judgment of Hashem. And shteim esrei nitrad. In the 12th hour he was sent v'holachloi and he left Gan Eden. All in a day's work. Mm-hmm. So what is this? What does this Gemara mean? Okay, so the Maral is going to take it apart, stage by stage, stage by magnificent stage. Okay, what the Maral is going to, the basic outline of what the Maral is going to do here is he's going to say that man is the most developed creature in the world, right? Man is B'Tzelem Elokim. Man is the ultimate creature in Hashem's world. But there are all kinds of levels of creatures in Hashem's world, right? We know that there is a hierarchy. We usually refer to it as Domein Tzomeach Chai Medaber, the inanimate objects, like the earth, the Tzomeach, the plants, which are more developed, the Chai, the living animals, which are even more developed, and Medaber, and the human being, the speaking human being. To go below that, even the Domein, even the inanimate objects, there are, you know, different elements which go into creating those inanimate objects. Right? There's Eish, Mayim, Ofor, Mayim, Ruach, Eish, right? Eish, Ruach, right? All the different basic elements, the dust, the water, right? There are things, the raw ingredients, which go into creating the inanimate objects. Then there's, again, the plants, and so on and so forth. So man is the most developed. So from the beginning of that day, we start from the basics. The first basic thing is, you got to get the raw material for the creation of man. So that's Chutzpar Afray, Shor Rishayna, in the first hour. Hashem brought together the dust from which man would be created. In the Gemara before, it discusses where the dust came from. This came from here, this came from there. The body came from Bavel, the head came from Eretz Yisrael. From dust, whatever different explanations you would have, but there was specific raw material which was going to be used to make man. So that was the order of the first hour, first stage. Get the raw materials. In the second hour, it gets formed into something. Something. A golem. A block. Which is a completely inanimate object. Nothing is growing. Nothing's alive. It's just a block. Anything which would exist in the world, in a certain sense, even dust and earth itself, requires that kind of a process, where you take the raw material and you give it the beginnings of tzura. You give it the beginnings of a structure, the beginnings of a bonding together of the raw separate elements. In the third hour, it developed to the next level. What's the next level? The next level is tzomeach, that it's not just a being which is stuck to itself, but it grows. Now, the golem, right, to some degree, has growing out of it. Evarim, limbs. Right, in the cheshbon, in the calculation of the 248 limbs in the person, the vast majority of them are on the hands and legs, on the arms and legs, I should say, rather. You know, the limbs of the arms, the limbs of the legs, the toes, the hands. Right, the feet, the hands, you know, the fingers. There are many, many evarim that the Gemara lists in each one of those, and those, like we've discussed in other aspects of writing, well, they're like branches which grow out of the trunk. Nimtechu evarav is that the golem, right, the narrow basic body, now started to develop, which is like a plant. That's the next stage. Then.
It didn't seem to say Hashem did it.
It did it. It happened. Nimtechu evarav. Right.
That's how the embryo does it.
Right. At a certain point in time, you see the little strings, right? Right.
Yeah, but it starts. When you have the from the father and the mother, the egg and the sperm. It's like the offer coming together.
Right. Okay, so that's even that's in itself. But you see it start to develop limbs at a later stage. And you look at it in the ultrasound, you'll see the limbs in the fourth hour. So then a neshama is put in, which means now it goes from tzomeach, from a plant, to a living thing. Now, when we hear the word neshama, especially when it comes to man, we think right away the divine neshama. And, of course, that's a big discussion. I learned with some of you once the Ramban in the Perek Beis of Bereishis, where he explains the Targum Onkelos. We're not going to discuss this at length now, where he explains the Targum Onkelos, that when it says, and Hashem formed man dust from the earth, and he breathed into him a breath of life, and man became a nefesh chaya, which would normally be translated as a living thing, and the Targum says he became a speaking being. So the way the Ramban understands it, it's not just because, well, man's life is more sophisticated, so he wants to translate it in a more sophisticated way. But he says, even before he was a speaking being, even before Hashem put him to him in a shema, he was alive. When Hashem formed him dust from the earth, he wasn't just a gailam. Just like he formed the animals from the earth, the animals were produced from the earth, and they were alive. He never blew into them a divine soul. So the Ramban there posits that even before he had a neshama, he was walking around. Before he was a man, he was a primate. Right? That's what the Ramban there posits. Right? So in this Gemara, the way the Maharal's reading the Gemara, is Nizrika by neshama doesn't mean the divine soul. Maybe that's why the Gemara uses the expression Nizrika by neshama instead of using a more delicate expression, or one which reflects the pasuk more, which was nafach by neshama. Nizrika by neshama means the soul was thrown into it. You know, it's a little casual. Because maybe this isn't the ultimate one, huh?
Why isn't
it
nefesh?
Yeah, nefesh
b'hamis. You know that the terminology is very, very, very interchanged between where you look. Which one is the lower one, which one is the higher one. It's not so simple. Yes, we conventionally, more usually say nefesh refers to the physical, neshama refers to the higher, but it's not so simple at all. The terminology is used in different ways in different places. Chamishis, in the fifth hour. So he went again from being chomer, raw material, to being domain, to being a specific item, but an inanimate item, to being a tzomer, to being having growth, to being chai, to being alive. So what's next? Now he has to grow into being a human being. But we got 5 hours left. Right? At least 5 hours left. So we'll see. Chamishis amad al raglav. In the fifth hour, he stood up on his feet. Now, that's not just alive, that's human. We know that one of the qualities we consider as being essentially unique as a human quality is that human being is called mahalchei shtayim instead of mahalchei arba. A human being walks on two legs, right, instead of walking on four, walking on his hands and feet. A human being stands upright. And Chazal already spoke about it. Maharal speaks about it many places. He speaks about it a little bit here. Right? But the idea, right, various ideas that you would say is, well, because in his case the head governs. Instead of the head being on the same level as the rest of the torso, right, in the way it functions, the head is up. Right? So the head is on top of the rest of the body. A person's supposed to be that way, that their decisions are not governed equally by the rest of their torso as they are by their head, but they're governed uniquely, essentially, by the Reish that leads all of that, that leads them. That's an aspect of Mahalchei Shtayim. The Maharal takes a different approach here, at least, and the idea that he says is because a human being, right, something which walks hunched over implies that it has something above it. Right? Whether it's a physical burden that bears it down, or whether it's some kind of an authority that's over its head. You know, interestingly, Chazal tell us that a person shouldn't walk Dalet Amos Bekaima Zekufa. A human himself should to some degree choose not to strut around, you know, like completely, you know, erect like that. That there should be a little bit, I'm not talking about like, let's say, a stoop, but there should be a little bit of a humility to his posture. Why? Because a person who walks around the Kaima Zakufa, strutting around like that, then he's acting as if there's nothing over him. The reason why we wear a yarmulke is the same reason, same Gemara. Person shouldn't walk dalet amos begili arish. Person walks four amos without something on his head, right? So then, again, it's like there's nothing over him. This is our way of feeling that there's something over us, that we're, that the Ribbono Shel Olam is over us. Okay. On the one hand, of course, the Ribbono Shel Olam is over us. On the other hand, and this is the great challenge of being a human being, Hashem created us to be over everything else. Kol shata tachas raglav. Hashem created us that we should rule over the fish and the birds and the animals and over the earth itself. You're the master of the world. Now again, a human being can forget about Hashem above him, or a human being can remember. But fundamentally, within the creation down here, Chaima Zakufa shows that you're supposed to be on top of everything else. You're supposed to be on top of everything else that exists down here. And the Maral says that's Pashut Pshat to him in Tselem Elohim, in the divine image. You know, there's so many different aspects and so many different interpretations, all of which, many of which have, you know, clear and real value in what it means Tselem Elohim. But the Maral says, Hashem created man with Tselem Elohim. Let's interpret that physically. What does that mean, he created man in the divine image physically? If God is, by definition, metaphysical, he's not physical at all, how could you create man physically in the image of God? So he says, obviously the idea is that you could still, while God has no physical image, but if you were trying to picture what a God with a physical image would look like, what would he look like? Well, he would look powerful, independent, subservient to nothing. And what physical image would that have? Standing upright. So a human being who is physical, who Hashem created to reflect godliness in the world, or the role of a God, the role of the Lord in the world, has what you would have imagined to be a picture. So if there is a physical image you would draw, you know, a Rorschach test of the Ribbono Shel Olam. So I don't know if that's the right term, you know, to use, but you know, like just okay, picture it, you know, art therapy, you know, draw a picture of this thing and tell me what it looks like. How do you picture this? How do you picture this mood? How would you picture the Ribbono Shel Olam? You picture the Ribbono Shel Olam as somebody like that, standing up. That's the Tzelem Elohim. So in the fifth hour, the human being went from being alive to being human, to standing up on his legs, developing further. In the sixth hour, Kara Shemais. In the sixth hour, he demonstrated yet another further capacity of a human being. He gave names to the various animals and things that exist within the world. You know, in the beginning of Bria, in the beginning of creation, Hashem gave names to everything. Hashem called the light day. He called the darkness night. Hashem called the firmament Shamayim, the sky. That's great because nobody knows what we're talking about when we're talking about the firmament. Right? So he called that the heavens. Right? He called the seas Yamin. He called the dry land earth, Eretz. Right? He named the things. The fourth day of creation, interestingly, it doesn't say that he named the things, the sun and the moon and the stars. But we said it this morning. Mayna misperlak echavim, l'chulam b'shem ha'sikra. Hashem gives a number to the stars. Each one of them he calls by name. He assigns them a name. Right? Besides the ones that around the holiday season you can name yourself for just $35. I'm sorry?
How do we know that?
We know it from Tilim. We know it from Tilim. It's a question why it doesn't say it in the Pasuk. That's a very clear and obvious question. Why doesn't it say it in the Pasuk that HaKadosh Baruch Hu named the stars? There's another difference. I won't say the whole thing, but do we know what they are?
The names are?
Yeah, we know what the names are, yeah.
Yeah, database.
In other words, Hashem called the dry land this. He called, you know, those names are shared names. The Kechavim, he didn't tell us their names. Right? So, You know, that's the, you know, that would be part of the challenge. But he did not give man, in other words, I'm saying that it's not a full explanation, obviously, but you understand it sets itself apart from the other namings that we have in the Chumash. But at the same time, he never gave man and said, here, go ahead, name the stars, because he never said to man, you're going to control the stars. Never said that. When it came to the animals, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, okay, you control those things. So as soon as man was born, he gave names to them. What?
We gave names to constellations in terms of Mabalas, didn't we? Or is that from HaKadosh Baruch?
Yeah, to some degree. We name stars too. To some degree, we name all of these things. Mm-hmm. Right? But.
Didn't it tell Abraham, one of the metaphors was, you know, the stars of the sky, the same way that you can't count the stars of the sky, that I'm going to make you that number. So, to a certain extent, the fact that they are innumerable from our standpoint was intentionally set up as a symbol for the Jewish people. If God had delineated them more explicitly in creation.
Very nice. Very nice. It's also just to add to the mix. This is a little bit beyond what we're talking about today, but Hashem doesn't even call the sun and the moon. The sun and the moon aren't even named. Remember, there's the big light for the daytime and the small light for the nighttime and the stars. It's never named in Yom Revi of Bereshis. It's not named there. So there's and that's finite. Those two are, but okay, whatever it is. But man certainly is exercising a certain bit of his wisdom, assessing, seeing what it is to give it its name. It's not just a computer generated name. It's not just Hashem said, okay, you know, it's stylish, let me call it Ashley. You know, man's naming of it was, this is what its essence is. It was the ability of man to be shalit with das. That's what's happening here in this hour. Shvius, nizdavga lechava. In the seventh hour, he got a mate, Chava. Now we know from Chazal that the full development of a human being only comes with a mate. As is well known, that before he was married he was incomplete, and when he was married he was finished. The notion of Nizdav Goloi Chava, of course, that's what we say. A person's not Shalim until that's the case, in a certain sense. That's what it says in Bereshit, when Hashem came in 6 days, Zachar Nekeva Baram. Adam was Zachar Nekeva, right? The one without the other is indeed incomplete. So man ascends to yet another level of completion. Next, Shminis Alulamita Shnayim V'yardu Arba. In the eighth hour, they made it and produced a child, two children. Right, what's that? That's yet another level. Now this is interesting, because you would say, well, every creature does that. Every creature is able to mate. Every creature is able to, you know, to reproduce. Is that something which is uniquely human? Well, you would say, well, how about by Chava also? Every human being necessarily has a mate. But we understand, we've discussed at different times, that the mate of a person is far different than the mate of an animal. The mate of an animal is male, female, get together, and separate. The zivug of Adam and Chava, that's why man and woman by humans were initially created as one, from one, because there, it's supposed to be a real connection, relationship, not just incidentally getting together, a stand and finished. Okay, but reproduction, you know, what's unique about that? So in a certain sense, maybe it's not unique. Maybe the reproduction of a human being is not unique. But the way the Maharal expresses it here is that once the human being reproduces, he goes beyond just being a prat, a particular individual, to being enlarged, to being of something bigger. The notion of giving, the notion of generating, of creating, of building out, is creating the klal in place of the prat. Right? That's a big focus always in the words of the Maharal. And in reproducing, that's something which you do. You become part of something instead of just being it. you become a piece of a klal of this nuclear family that you have created.
Isn't there a mitzvah that you're supposed to wait until Shabbos to have children?
Sorry?
Isn't there a mitzvah they're supposed to wait until Shabbos to procreate?
A regular person, you mean? You're talking about that Adam and Chava were supposed to?
Yeah.
There are all kinds of midrashim with different accounts of what happened. All kinds of midrashim with different accounts of what happened. We're going on this piece of Gemara, which is describing a staging in the development of man, and this staging, reproduction, was a stage in filling out man. Now man was a part of something greater.
Is it also an issue of Tzalakim where he becomes a creator now?
Again, we have to handle that with a little bit of a caution. Because the creativity of reproduction is shared with a horse. Everything in creation is created, asher zare b'ilamineu, with the ability to reproduce and to regenerate. So you have to make something more with it. In the ninth hour, which is the last hour of positive development that we have here in this sequence, nitzava, he was given his mitzvahs. Says the Maral, that's the ultimate development of a human being. A direct instruction from Hashem.
They were given late. They were given late. He should have been given the third, fourth.
He gave the Abdul Hashama. Why does he pick this? He gave him basically the Abdul Hashama, I say, and most I say, but here he focuses on the Eighth of that. It was much more what he's supposed to do.
Don't the instructions have to be given at the beginning?
Evidently, there is such a thing called general... I'll address your question first. There's such a thing called instructions, you know, general understandings that Adam was able to have by himself. Right? The seichel he had because of the endowment which Hashem gave him. He was able to be Korei Shemus. He was able to do what had to be done. This is that tzivui from Hashem Yisbarach. And that tzivui from Hashem Yisbarach, that level of connection, of perfection, that came as the ultimate makkah bepatish, the final hammer blow of the perfection of man, was the tzivui. Was drawing that connection.
Also, maybe now, there is actually a tribe in Turkey that actually still move on all fours because genetically, they do not have a part of their cerebellum that allows them to stand up straight. That's the lower portion of the brain. The more advanced portion of the brain, the portion of the brain that allows us to do mitzvahs, is much more advanced than human beings. So it's a different, it actually follows physiology.
What?
No. They are.
The advanced portion of the brain. After he receives the most basic.
There are. I mean, nowadays one sees without question because there. You know, it's not, and you know, some would attribute it to some just simply, you know, place or whatever, an evolutionary development or something like that. There are parts of the brain, with brain imaging, the studies which they have now as a result of brain imaging and seeing the things people do, you see that there are that so many of special, distinctive human capacities are localized in certain parts of the brain. And people who have, whatever, I wasn't familiar with this, that's very interesting, people who, a whole tribe that didn't have it developed, but people who have injury or whatever it is, something that's missing in those parts, so that would be incapacity. That's why sometimes, you know, when people study people with strokes, there are all kinds of different things. There are people who can emerge from a stroke with perfectly able to move their hands and feet and speak and everything else, but suddenly they have an inability to plan ahead. They have an inability to, you know, to move ahead without caution. You know, to, you know, there are different, huh? And it's so, it's unbelievable. You read this; it's so identified with different locations. It's a fascinating thing. But okay, that's also part of this. You know, part of this development. But this is nitzava, and that's the ultimate line of connection. I'm not sure what to say about your question about that. Hashem did give him a mitzvah of the Lashamra to guard and to work the garden, and then he said, and then he instructed him, and he said, you should eat from all the things. Now the thing is like this: what one could say is, I mean, I never thought about this, so it has to be developed. But it never says that he instructed him la'avdo l'shamra. It says he took man and he placed him in Gan Eden to work it and to preserve it, la'avdo l'shamra. And then it says, and he instructed him and he said, from all the trees you should do it. So the first time you have the language of explicit tzivui is that way. He put it there for that purpose. Maybe that was also sort of like he knew what he had to do. Now Chazal do say la'avda is mitzvah saseh and l'shamra is mitzvah slay saseh, but those haven't been laid out yet. That's the purpose of what he's supposed to do there. Now let me give you the mitzvahs. There's a mitzvah saseh, eat from the trees of the garden, a mitzvah slay saseh, not to. So the actual tzivuyim, which may have been the tools of la'avda l'shamra, came then. Okay. So that's the ultimate thing. So that's this is where it could stop. Now let's just finish off the Gemara. Finish off the Gemara. The day isn't over yet, but you know what happens after the ninth hour? The day is starting to wane. In a certain sense, of course, you know, afternoon, right? The sun is going down instead of going up, right? But for the first 3 hours of the afternoon, the sun is still so much high in the sky that it's still considered Od Hayom Gadol. The day was still big. Right? When do we start the period which is called Mincha Ketana? When the day is really ending, you know, the real time of Mincha is in the middle of the 10th hour, right? This time is when you're already getting this, you know, Teisha Shois is a Shir. It's the end of the day, is a Teisha Shois. This is now the exiting of the day. And so says the Maharal, that's why in this part of the day, you find the aspects of man which are incompleteness developing. Because as much as we've been describing this build-up towards this complete creation, right, with the ultimate step being the tzivui, as we've said here, Torah min hashamayim, but man isn't complete. He's not complete. And that's manifest in the fact of his chet. So in the ninth hour, in the tenth hour, he sins. The day is waning. In the 11th hour, he is nidon. He is judged. He begins to face the consequences of his sin. And in the 12th hour, in other words, he's told the consequences of the sin, and in the 12th hour, he actually is made to leave the garden.
What's
Sarach? Sarach is sin, spoiled. Literally, but that's the reference to the chet. That's where he started to turn. So those last 3 hours, again, Maral doesn't discuss in great depth what between Sarach and Nidon and this, but it's all part of this essential yerida of mankind. That man isn't perfect, and therefore he's going to decrease that way. That's the idea, says the Maral. And that's his interpretation. I think it's a classic and beautiful interpretation, stage by stage, step by step. And with this, he pretty much ends the perek. There's one other word here which I'll just share with you quickly, which is worthwhile, just to complete it. We've spoken here about three elements of Torah Min HaShamayim. One element of Torah Min HaShamayim is an order to the world, and the last two were about man. One was about making man more perfect, and the other one was about creating a connection between man and Hashem. Says the Maral, and this is very shorthand, but he says that's the essential difference between the two bodies of Torah. What do you mean the two bodies of Torah? There's a body of Torah called the Chamisha Chumshei Torah, the Sefer Torah, the fullness of Torah, the five books, the 613 commandments, which Moshe Rabbeinu only got and completed at the end of his life. Got it at Har Sinai, but only wrote it and completed it at the end of his life. And then there's something else. What's that? The Luchas, the two tablets that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him at Har Sinai, right when he was coming down, the Aseres HaDibres. There's the Ten Commandments, and then there's the rest of the Torah. So how do we understand the relationship between the Aseres HaDibres and the rest of the Torah? Right? So on one level, we talk sometimes about the Aseres HaDibreis. Rashi brings Aseres HaDibreis are the archetypes for the rest of the Torah. Hashem sort of like gave it to us in shorthand, and the rest could be expanded. Rav Sadia Goyim famously wrote his book of mitzvahs based on the Ten Commandments, explaining how all the mitzvahs are tied into each, you know, to throughout the ten, the Aseres HaDibreis. Okay. Maral says something else. He says it was something which is like far more natural to his. The Aseres HaDibreis was Mamon Har Sinai. The Aseres HaDibreis was Hashem creating a relationship, a connection with Klal Yisrael. It was that aspect, what we've called here the third aspect. Hashem spoke to the Jewish people. We see the Luchais, in a sense, as the ring, you know, of engagement between Hashem and the Jewish people. The Aseres HaDibreis have as their touchstone, Anoichi Hashem Elokecha, I am Hashem your God, the revelation, the connection between Hashem and man, specifically to the Jewish people. The Torah, the rest of the Torah, is all the details of the aspects of how a human being can have all these different pieces of wisdom to make themselves as full as they can. So that's the division between the two. The Aseres HaDibreis was what was given directly from Hashem to us to forge the connection between Hashem and us. But it's not the full perfection of man. It's that aspect. The full perfection of man comes through the full gamut of the Chamisha Chumshei Torah and the Tariq Mitzvahs. Those are the elements of Torah in Hashem.